You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Oh, good afternoon here. Jim Potts and Jamal Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday afternoon or your Sunday evening, whatever the case may be, with us. Well, Jamal, we got to talk about a number of things today.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things we're going to be talking about today has to do with all of this political violence, extremism, et cetera. So we kind of thought that this might be a perfect time to talk about, you know, such things.
Absolutely.
You know, before we get into the rest of this, I want to remind everybody that we are streaming live. So if you go to LA Talk Radio and click on the link, and you know, you'll be able to see us live on Facebook. All right, so just go to LA Talk Radio and go ahead and do your follow through on that. Click it around, you know, latalkradio.com, and you'll see us live today as well as it's every week. You know, to be honest with you, from that standpoint, you know, I got to tell you something interesting. Before we left from home to come over here, we were on the phone. My wife and I were on the phone with a friend, a long term friend. That's, she's a liberal, no doubt about it. And she's always spoke out about gun violence and things of that nature. Well, she lives in Virginia. Today, we find out that as much as she's been anti-gun, we find out today that she and her brother, again, this is in Virginia, turned around and bought an AR-15, Jamal.
Hey, man, go hard or go home, man. Like, you go from no guns to the hottest one on the market. Like,
and it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, this is hard for me to understand here because this person was so anti-gun, but now Virginia's getting ready to pass this law. Okay, so you're not going to be able to get a gun, basically.
Well, did she get the AR-15 with the grenade launcher on the bottom, too?
we didn't go that far with the conversation. Because believe what I tell you, I got to say, I was in shock more than anything else, you know.
Man.
But that just goes to show you how people are changing, you know, with some of this. All of a sudden, you know, yesterday was like, no, don't that, anti-gun. And then all of a sudden they come out and say, hey, you know what, we're not going to let people buy one. What? And they want to run down and buy one. So listen, I don't know.
Listen, man, I love my country, man. I do. But, man, when we panic about something, man, we go all out, man. Yeah. It's like World War Z out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. it's true. We do take it to the extreme. That's who we are. But, and anyway, I just had to mention that to the listeners. Like, look, guys, I don't know. You know, we say one thing one day, do something else the next day. Things change, views change, you know, maybe that's why that's just the American way.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so.
It really is.
Now, we feel fortunate from that standpoint, but let's go ahead and get busy with these emails, though. Jim, with all the discussion about the NRA, do you know that there are gun right organizations that arguably are better than the NRA, yet we hardly hear about them? Look them up. You'll be surprised. Terry, Salt Lake City. Yeah, you know what, I did look that up, actually. You know, they have these different organizations that are actually more aggressive, apparently, than the NRA, but yet the NRA is all we ever hear about.
Right.
You know, they have one called the Second Amendment Foundation. The Second Amendment Foundation. I can tell you, I've never heard them on the news.
Wow.
You know, every time something happens, we hear about the NRA getting involved and, you know.
Well, how could they be more aggressive if the NRA was the, you think you would hear about it more often. Well, but you're right, I've never heard of none of these groups.
Yeah, the Second Amendment Foundation was actually founded in 1974. And, you know, they've won a number of lawsuits with the Supreme Court regarding Second Amendment issues. I mean, so these guys are very active with fighting for Second Amendment rights. Now, as we know, the NRA is as well.
Right.
You know, and so, again, this is all, you know, this is all news to me from that perspective. Let's put it that way.
Right.
When this individual brought this up to me, I'm like, yeah, let me get on there because, you know, with all that I do, I've never heard of them, you know.
Right.
Then they got another one, and this other organization, Jamal, is called the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. And it's called the JPFO, was originally founded by Jews who wanted to fight the evils of disarming innocent populations. Well, now what are we talking about?
Wow.
Disarming innocent populations. I mean, you can understand that because over in their country, that could be a big issue.
Right.
You know, so.
So are they American-based or
over there? Oh, yeah. No, it's American-based. It's okay. Man, if this was over there, you know, I don't know that they would survive.
True. Yeah, true. That's, yeah.
You know, so what they're talking about here is the fact that they want to destroy the so-called gun control Okay, they want gun control. No gun control. You know, they want to expose the misguided notions that lead people to seek out so-called gun control. They want to encourage Americans to understand and defend all the Bill of Rights for citizens. The Second Amendment is the guardian of the Bill of Rights. I mean, so again,
right.
You could look at an organization like this and say, okay, are they extremists? But they're not any more extremist than some of these Americans who are saying the same thing.
Right.
You know, it's just that they're an organization that's actually getting together,
right.
You know, as an organization, and they've taken some issues all the way to the Supreme Court.
Look, I'm all about, you know, gun rights, gun ownership. Like, you know me, you know what I mean? But it does have to be some kind of control, man. That's law and order.
Well, there is controls out there, though. The controls that are out there is that, you know, ex-felons supposedly can't have guns, right. this and that, but that doesn't stop people from getting guns.
Right, but I mean the kind of guns that people have, you know what I mean?
Well,
does the average person in the inner city need a 50 caliber rifle, sniper rifle?
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had those conversations on the air,
right.
Regarding even callers calling in regarding the fact that you know, on this issue that we have talked about, the fact who can get them, who can't get them.
Right.
I'm of the frame of mind, Jamal, none of those automatic weapons, and I've said this on the air before, so for the new listeners, they haven't heard me on this, but the reality is that I don't think everyday citizens need these weapons.
Right.
You know, I mean, it should be reserved for military, and it should also be reserved for the law enforcement.
Right.
Other than that, you're
talking specifically about the military-grade rifles.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm a hunter. You know that.
Right.
You know, so I've got my hunting rifles and things. Now, to me, that's a little bit different.
You know, I actually was talking to a military person, and they was telling me that there's more restrictions on people in the military in terms of how they storm and everything else and on base and things like that. There's more restrictions there, and these people are trained.
It, makes you,
you
wonder,
have
doesn't
more
it?
Restrictions than the average citizen.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I want to get through the rest of these off this email. So the other one is called the Gun Owners of America. Okay, that sounds pretty cool. Although GOA was founded, it was founded by a guy by the name of H.L. Richardson, who's also a member of the board of directors for the NRA. So this is a spinoff of sorts, I guess. You know, so that's another organization that believes that in the Second Amendment,
right.
You know, that we should have it. And I'm sure all of these are going to be the same way, for sure. Now, one of the things, let's see, they said the problem with the secret government watch list is that they are full of non-criminals. No one should lose their rights, including those protected by the Second Amendment, without being convicted. So that goes back to what I was saying before.
Right.
And when you said there should be some restrictions, that would be one of the restrictions,
true.
You know,
yeah,
from
true.
That perspective. But everyday citizens, come on, what's wrong with that?
Right.
You know, anyway. So Terry had pointed out, so, you know, told me, hey, look them up. Well, I did find them. Now, there's another one called the National Association for Gun Rights. National Association for Gun Rights. And they talk about the fact that they claim 4.5 million grassroots activists. I mean, 4.5 million.
That's a
grassroots,
lot of people.
That's a lot of people. You know, and they're basically, their mission is to halt the radical anti-gun agenda across the nation. So, you know, they say it's constitutional to carry. It's a simple idea that law-abiding people shouldn't be forced to get a government permission slip to exercise their right to self-defense. No one should be treated like a criminal simply for wishing to carry a firearm in defense of themselves or their family. You know, so, I mean, again, all of what these guys are saying is basically the same thing.
Right.
You know, but again, I haven't heard of these people. You know, I haven't seen or heard of them.
But you're not legit until you're part of some group.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. Well, but you know what? It's in numbers, though. Some of these people, when they form these organizations, you know, I mean, like the NRA, you know, they're out there and they are canvassing the people, talking to the people,
right.
Making sure what people want and don't want.
Right.
And they're going to the mat. They're going to the California Supreme Court. They're going to their legislators. And then the last one is called the Constitutional Rights Pack. Okay. So this one said basically is not limited to a simple issue, but one of current projects to end gun-free zones. So you know how some of these have gun-free zones? They're saying no. It's like the sanctuary cities,
right.
We can't bring one in, so these are gun-free zones.
Right.
All right, so it said one of the things, and off their website says, you helped us stop Obama's gun-grabbing agenda, you know, by standing up for the Gun Appreciation Day. So I guess they have a Gun Appreciation Day, or have
right.
had it anyway. And they said that they turned out about 700,000 people nationwide, and it said handed Obama his first defeat. End gun-free zones now before more innocent, defenseless lives are taken. Well, you know, This, I mean, this is what it is. I mean, the rhetoric is all the same.
You know what? I mean, there's some areas maybe they should be a gun-free zone.
Schools. We can start with that one.
Well, areas in Chicago.
The gun-free zones in Chicago, Jamal, are innocent neighborhoods, and then who do you got? You got the criminals with the guns.
Right.
It goes back to the same issue.
Yeah, true.
You know, from that perspective. So, I don't know. You know, it makes it a little bit more difficult, you know, when people get hurt and they wish they had a gun.
That's true.
You know, from that standpoint. But, well, Terry, there it is. I did do some research on there, like you suggested. And yeah, I did find the top five. But the sad part about it is I've never heard of those. I mean, I don't know how outspoken they are. They appear to be legitimate organizations, so to speak. But the NRA is just out there. I mean, they are definitely out there. So at any rate, okay, next one. Jim, by any chance, do you feel that the outbreak of the coronavirus was intentionally by China as a means of conducting germ warfare? Let's face it. They have had other such things come out in the past. Anonymous. I don't blame you for being anonymous. Look, we can't come up with these conspiracy theories out there, guys. People, Jamal, we've mentioned about the virus before. People are running rampant out there with all of this. And, you know, look, we got to listen to what the professionals are saying in this area out there, people, okay? We don't want to get into this business where, you know, we're going to accuse China now of ramping up for germ warfare. And I think that that's a stretch, you know, from that standpoint. Because, look, how many of their people got impacted? They had 89,000 people impacted. They want to do germ warfare. They wouldn't have included their population. And don't be writing to me talking about maybe they wanted to thin out the population, okay? They got a lot of people over there. They're not going to be turning on themselves.
Right.
So, no, let's not come up with the conspiracy theories, you guys. I think that we just need to keep the focus and do the things that we need to do and follow what the medical people on the news are talking about and stop panicking. I had a client the other day contact me and say, Jim, all the employees are worried. So what recommendations do you have for the coronavirus? I'm like, well, one, don't go on a cruise. And number two, don't go to China. Now, other than that, what can I really honestly say? You got to listen to what the medical people are saying. Wash your hands. Right now, you know, sneeze into your elbow, so to speak. But the thing about it is, look, guys, we have been through all of this before. Listen to what the news is saying. They're saying that the risk is very, very low, and yet we panic on a very high level. You know, just calm down a little bit. Do the things we should be doing anyway. Coughing into your or sneezing into your elbow when you're around other people is something you should be doing anyway. So from that perspective and washing your hands, regularly is something that helps keep down different types of influenzas and things of that nature as well.
Right. So are the people, are they saying on the news and the medical people on the news saying, run out and buy toilet paper?
No.
Because you cannot find toilet paper on the shelf. Although I got lucky this morning, they had just restocked and I was there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I hope it wasn't an emergency, Jamal.
Man, no, it wasn't, man. So I'm like, is this thing causing diarrhea to to get people running for their life to get toilet paper?
No, is what it is that because of the fact that they're telling people to hunker down or stay inside, people aren't going out as much. And then, you know, when people do get put on a quarantine, you're locked down for 14 days.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, I think, what the basic premise of that is.
Right.
I mean, I'm not paranoid about it myself, but I was driving down the street yesterday going to the office. And
right.
Here's a little guy with a little store, and on the back of his car, on a cardboard sign, he had, I have hand sanitizer. Jamal, let me tell you something. I hit the brakes. I think two cars behind me may have ran into each other. I stopped, so that didn't really happen. I went inside, you know, and sure enough, the guy had some, because, you know, nobody's got hand sanitizer.
Right.
And I wanted to see what this guy had.
Here's what I find funny about this whole toilet tissue phenomenon. Everybody's worried about the coronavirus, yet they're all cluttered up in the stores fighting each other over toilet paper. You know what I mean? The irony of that. This one lady laid across her cart and was telling people, get off my toilet paper.
Really?
Somebody else pulled a knife. Like, and it's not going on just here. This is going on in Australia, Wales. People are going crazy, man. This reminds me of when Popeye's Chicken had a chicken sandwich.
You know, this emotional stuff out there, Jamal. You're right about that. This emotional stuff out there, man. People get carried away. But, you know, when we do the training with active shooter training, one of the one things I always tell people, stay in control of your emotions.
Right.
What do we tell managers, Jamal, and HR?
Right.
Stay in control of your emotions.
Man, I never thought I'd see the day somebody pull a knife on somebody for some toilet paper.
Right.
Hey, you keep your toilet paper, bro. I'm just going away.
Right. I'll go get the LA Times.
Yeah.
I'll look in a different direction for that. But at any rate, you know, so, hey, Anonymous, all we're going to say is that, look, follow what the medical people are saying, not necessarily other people and all these scare tactics out there. But the other message I'm going to send out there is that there are scammers out there, you guys. So be careful with the scammers that are out there telling you about they got a cure for this and a cure for that. The reality is, apparently, the only people getting seriously ill are elderly people who have medical conditions. The children appear to be pretty safe. They're saying that the children really aren't being impacted by this, which is a good thing.
Right.
So, for those people that are out there that are healthy, chances are this is going to be, and again, I'm not giving out medical advice. Let me make that clear. Okay.
Right.
I'm just going by what they're talking about on the news and how, you know, and the safeguards, et cetera.
Oh, right. By the way, you know, being that my oldest son works at a grocery store, he said the sales of Corona beer is down by like 40%. I don't know who told these people that Corona beer is
related to coronavirus.
But the sales is down. So if you want to get a beer this weekend, I'm sure there's a sale on Corona.
But you know what they were also talking about was the fact that on the news they were talking about also about the airline tickets. If you want to buy an airline ticket to Europe next year, the prices are down right now because nobody's flying.
Wow.
So you could get the ticket now at a very low price. And you know by next year, you know, this thing will be another figment of the past.
Right.
We're talking about 5 years from now. Anyway, let's move on. Last email. Jim, on the HR front, can we stop employees from discussing politics in the workplace?
Oh, man, we wish.
Okay, it is becoming very emotional and disruptive. Jason, Riverside, California. Look, Jason, here's what it is. You're not going to stop that. They're going to talk. If the manager's not around, these people are still going to be talking about it. You know, people can talk about it on their breaks. The only thing to me a manager can really honestly do is that if it's a distraction from the work that they're doing, so they're spending more time, you know, talking about that than doing their work, I think that that is a factor. All right? But the realities are, there's no political views that are protected, you know, under Title VII, which is the federal laws regarding employment discrimination, or the California laws as an example. Each state has their own agency with this. So it's not discriminatory. There's no protection for political view. Let's just put it that way. The only one exception to it, as I understand, is if a person is working on a political campaign and now you take some type of action against them for being on that political campaign. But other than that, Jason, you're not going to be able to stop people from talking about this. It's just not going to happen that way.
Right.
You know, and they're going to do this. They're going to do this before the election. They're going to do it after the election because now they're going to be talking about who are you choosing? What are the policies? Don't vote for this person. Don't vote for that person. And then after the election is over, then you're going to have why did that person get elected or why did that person get reelected? So you're always going to have these emotional type of issues, which kind of leads us into from the emotional standpoint, leads us into the main topic for the day, Jamal.
Right.
You know, in terms of the fact that people, you know, get very violent during politics. Now, people just don't realize. I mean, they think some of this stuff, Jamal, is going on right now. I mean, but as you know, the research that we have done, you just cleared your throat, but you didn't do it into your elbow. I just thought I'd mention that.
Excuse me.
Okay, there you go.
You set the good example.
At any rate, look, these violent conflicts that are surrounding elections goes all the way back to the beginning of American history, people. Okay, this is not new. The founding era actually often portrayed as a period dominated by outstanding, level-headed statesmen, you guys. It's not what it was, all right? Because these guys all set us on this course that was fantastic and all of that. But let me just tell you something. Hey, I was a history major. All right, my undergraduate degree is in history. I majored in American history, minored in Black history. Look, that was a chaotic period. People just don't realize how chaotic it really was.
Right.
Because when they write the history books, they want to paint this great picture.
Right.
You know, about how great it was. But political violence was a constant threat during that period of time.
Right.
Okay, and occasionally it was a reality about what was going on during that time. So I'm only saying that to say, look how far back we're talking about. So don't think that it wasn't chaotic back then. It was.
Right.
These political elections, things of this nature, can be very, very political. Matter of fact, in 1804, Aaron Burr, who was vice president, and wanted to become, actually he wanted to work on becoming president one day, he actually killed Alexander Hamilton, which was George Washington's former Secretary of the Treasury, in a duel.
Wow.
Okay, and the reason for that was because he doubted whether or not Aaron Burr's judgment and patriotism. So Hamilton had worked to deny Burr the governorship of New York, and Burr was outraged over Hamilton's effort to deny him the political success that he craved, that he wanted.
Wow.
So they get into this duel, and look, again, it's basic history. Aaron Burr shot and killed in a duel Alexander Hamilton.
Right.
Alexander Hamilton was George Washington's one of the guys that during the American Revolution that was basically by his side.
Right.
You know, and now he dies in a duel over what? Politics.
Wow.
Politics. You know. So the period roughly between 1820 and the onset of the Civil War was actually marked by a substantial increase in ethnic and religious diversity. So here we go with diversity way right. back then. Because now all you hear on the news about this thing about everybody is so diverse, okay?
Right.
And, you know, diversity is diversity. This is not new, all right? Now, they also had an increase in violent conflicts surrounding the politics and the elections, like I just said. Now, in addition to that, you add race and you add religion.
Right.
And what happens? And then the emotions really kick in hard.
It starts getting a little crowded.
And that's exactly right. And then today's politics, these clashes have stemmed from heightened anxieties about, you know, native white Protestants and about the consequences they had at one time between the Irish and the German Catholics. People don't realize or remember those conflicts.
Right.
But there is one, and that's based on religion. The Irish, you know, against the German Protestants, the Irish Protestants. So, you know, when we hear about these things on the news, you know, we have to understand that any time people are either in a position or we're going to be electing people, goes back to what the person was asking about in the, on the HR side. It's emotional for people.
Right.
It's emotional for people. Well, Jamal, even in our own office, we've had conversations about it.
Yes, we have, man. It gets quiet. When you walk into the office and it's quiet, chances are there was a political conversation going on.
Yeah, well, when I walk in the office, everything gets quiet anyway. So it's when I'm not there, it'd be interesting for me to tape record exactly what's going on. Let's put it that way, see what people are saying. But now there was another, they had an anti-Catholic and the American Party, okay? Now people don't know what the American Party is. You know, we've talked about before, and my personal opinion is the reason why we're having so many of these conflicts right now in politics is because we're really down to a two-party system.
Right.
It was never meant to be a two-party system.
Right.
Now they had this one party called the Know-Nothings. It was called the Know-Nothing Party. Okay, I'm just telling you, okay? Some people called it the American Party back then. And you're talking about in the 1850s,
right?
And some of the Know-Nothing violence against recent immigration. Here we go.
Right.
Okay, against immigration, we're talking 1850.
Right.
Okay, and the issue of immigration was out there.
Right.
And what are we still talking about? Immigration.
Right.
All right, immigration. All right, look how many years later.
I know the Native Americans must be thinking, y'all got y'all nerve.
You got that right. So y'all got your nerve right. That's true, man. But they were hardly a fringe movement. By 1854, they had the Know-Nothing Party, Jamal, by 1854, had actually elected 52 there were 234 members of Congress at that time. 52 of them were from the Know-Nothing Party.
Wow.
See, what does that show you? Once again, you had to be able to split, work. And these people had to work together. They can have differing views. We need a system that's set up, as far as I'm concerned, that's more than just basically the two that we have right now.
Right.
But, again, that's going to be hard now.
Right.
You know, back then, you know, it was a lot easier than what it's going to be now.
Right.
Because, I mean, I know the third party right now that we have are the Libertarians and things of that nature, but
the Green Party.
The Green Party was at one time. They had the Whigs at one time. I mean, this is all kinds of different names that were going on. And but these conflicts between Native white Protestants. So back then, it was the Native white Protestants that were hard on immigration.
Right.
And you have to look at that and say, hey, what are we talking about here?
Right.
You know? they didn't care if they were if their skin color was the same. Right. All they cared about is they were immigrants.
Because they were really attacking the Irish, right? The Irish at one time, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Now they had what they call Bloody Monday, Jamal. This was in 1855. Again, is what we did. We went back in time. Now we'll bring some of these more forward, also. All right. But we went back in time with some of this. 1855, Bloody Monday, 22 people, mostly recent German and Irish immigrants, again, immigration, right, were killed and many more were injured in Election Day riots in Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow.
Struggle for power. I mean, 22 people killed, many more injured. 1855 had to do with immigration and religion.
See, that's interesting, and I'm glad we're talking about this because a lot of things that I learned was just coming up was about the civil rights and this and that, but this goes back way before.
Oh yeah,
in terms of you know.
Well, you know what you're talking about you know slavery or we're talking about civil rights. I'll tell you, and here's what most people don't know: the deadliest conflict that had to do with
politics
was the Civil War.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that. So when they start talking about conflicts over this stuff, the Civil War, most people say, swear up and down, that the reason why we had the Civil War, of course, was to free the slaves. And that was not what it was.
Right.
It really was upset is because it bears remembering that the Civil War was sparked by the refusal by the Southern states to accept the results of the 1860 election.
Wow.
And who got elected in 1860, Jamal? Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Okay, so they were upset with the results of the election.
Right.
So here we go. I mean, so once again, let's just bring that modernly. How many people were upset with the election from 2016?
Right.
Okay, so it's not new. People get upset, you know, and I don't know what the balance is, at some point. But, you know, but 1860, Abraham Lincoln got elected president. You know, and the whole issue, Lincoln made it clear if he could have kept slavery, okay, he would have done it.
Right.
But that wasn't what it was. Okay?
Right.
In order to preserve the Union, I'm talking about.
Right, right.
So the South wanted to secede from the Union. They wanted to break off because they didn't like the results of the election.
Right.
But how the heck are we going to break off every time we have an election that people don't like?
Right.
You want to start taking your state and go someplace else?
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Name of the country is the United States. Okay?
Right.
You know, it's all of them.
Right.
You know? So that's why they kind of went to war. Now, the interesting thing about it is that unusual contest, which had featured four major presidential candidates. Now, you know, it gets narrowed down to two.
Right.
Okay, is the bottom line, right?
Right.
Well, they had four major candidates at that time.
Wow.
Lincoln ended up getting elected, okay? Because, okay, first of all, he was the first Republican elected president. I'm not even sure that you know that, okay? But the Republican standard bearer was Abraham Lincoln, despite the fact, you know how many, what his, now, four, right?
Right.
You know what the percentage of voters were that got him elected? 39%. So 39%.
That's pretty high, 39%.
39%, but think about something, 39% still, that means how many others did not want Lincoln?
Right, true.
Almost 60%.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, because so you look at that and say, okay, if you had divided this up, okay, or if they had narrowed it down, who knows, maybe he never would have been elected.
True.
Okay, from that perspective, but it was so divisive.
Right.
Four major candidates at that time.
Wow.
And he ended up getting elected almost by process of elimination. Now, this goes back to what's going on right now, because what are people talking about in terms of the election when you really think about it? The way that these people are splitting off,
right,
and who is supporting who, who's not supporting somebody, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Not getting into that aspect of it. But think about it. It's the same basic philosophy as what we're talking about here in 1860.
Right.
Now, Lincoln did not support the immediate emancipation of slaves. He didn't. Southern leaders believed that he intended to destroy the Southern slave system. So that's why they sought to exit the Union in order to prevent that from happening.
Right.
Okay, but that wasn't Lincoln's plan. Lincoln just didn't want them to break off.
Right.
Okay, and he didn't even do the emancipation until a couple of years, you know, after the Civil War really started.
Can you imagine being president and you did nothing and you could not stop and you was in charge of the country and the country broken off under your watch?
That's why they say he's one of the greatest presidents.
I can see that.
because he had to keep the whole country together.
Right.
It was, we know that it was the bloodiest war on our soil. Everybody right. knows that. But it was all based on politics.
Right.
Now, I had friends tell me that, look, Jim, you know what? If the current administration gets reelected, we've heard that there's going to be fighting in the streets and stuff like that. Give me a break, guys.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, it led to civil war.
See,
I think those days are gone.
This is the thing people got to understand with politics, man. Just because you have a difference of opinion, you see things differently, doesn't have nothing to do with your patriotism. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You just have different viewpoints. And once again, because of the system that we have set up, there's no more than two terms.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like it, this too shall pass. There was a lot of people that was upset when 44 was in office. It passed.
It passed.
And we survived.
And we survived.
You know what I mean? One way or the other. So it's just like everybody got to remain calm. And I don't know how much this stuff, I mean, there's always an impact on the country whenever we have a new president.
Right.
But I mean, how much does it really, really disturb your everyday, day-to-day life?
For some people, a lot. Hey, by the way, if anybody is interested in calling in, you can call us at 818-602-4929. Wouldn't mind hearing some opinions out there if anybody wants to call in. You can go to the website. The number's on the website as well. But I'll give it to you again, 818-602-4929. But it's true. You know, this racialized election violence, Jamal, here's what happened. Even after the Civil War, though, so think about something else. After the Civil War ends, and now the North goes down into the South, and who do they put in? They put into office some of the freed slaves, so to speak. I'm kind of
right.
giving an overview of that.
Right.
And then what happened was they tried to enfranchise. So not disenfranchise. Enfranchise means to give African Americans. They wanted to strengthen the Republican Party organization in the Southern states. And, of course, that was being fought off.
Right.
By who? By the Southern whites.
Right.
Okay, but to the victor goes the spoils.
Right.
Is what was going on. So now we still have politics.
Right.
Okay, with the violence. So we have
right.
a war that started because of politics.
Right.
And now we have an aftermath that's still based on emotions from you know, politics.
Right.
You know, so, you know, again, this business goes back a long, long time. And you're talking about the 1870s, the 1880s, the 1890s, where all these kind of things were going on. They had armed groups of newly enfranchised African-Americans and their white Republican supporters repeatedly squared off against white supremacists, paramilitary organizations and states throughout the South. So we're talking in the 1800s, we had white supremacists back then.
Right.
You know, and because... You know, if people really look up to see what that was all about, they were fighting for their own existence at that
right.
time. And because of the politics of it, that's how they emerged.
Right.
I'm not supporting them in terms of what they were doing. I'm only
right.
telling you know, what really happened.
Right.
You know, the threat and repeated execution of violence remained important features of efforts by white supremacists to suppress the African-American and Latino voting registration.
Right.
That's not new. All right. That's why they had to come up with the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Now, that strengthened federal voting rights protections and authorized federal monitoring of election rules in states with records of racial discrimination and voting.
Right.
See, once again, that's all based on emotions.
Right.
You know, it's all based on emotions, to make a long story short. Now, after they enacted the Voting Rights Act, Jamal, 1968 Democratic National Convention, was marred by the violent suppression of anti-war demonstrations by the Chicago Police Department. Demonstrators actually and explicitly portrayed American involvement in Vietnam as the continuation of the American imperialism. So again, it's still based on extreme emotions,
right.
politics, political. So we've never gotten out of that.
Right.
And it's a shame. And I don't know what the answer, you know, what the answer may be. And I fought both sides, you know, when I say both sides, because there's only two political parties, so
you know,
to speak.
I know who to blame, the media, for some of this, man, because sometimes the media seems like they just fan the flames, and it seemed like some things are one-sided and untruthful and or withhold information to make one side seem better than the other, or instead of just telling all the facts and the truth. They do what's in their best interest and not tell all the facts
well,
to certain stories.
I had a student one time, Jamal, tells me if it bleeds, it reads. So the more that they can get out of there and fan the flames like you say,
right?
Those are what the realities are. Now, I'm going to tell you, they had something called the Colfax, C-O-L-F-A-X massacre. Okay, some people called it the Colfax riots, all right? Now, that took place on April 13th. So that's why I'm bringing this one up, because April is right around the corner. April 13th, 1873. It took place in Colfax, Louisiana. And you know what it had to do with? Local elections. 150 black men were murdered by white Southerners who had formed the militia. Only three white guys died during that time.
Wow. But
because they contested, the whole thing was about the election of the governor of Louisiana and local offices by a group of white Democrats. And these guys had rifles, they had cannons, all kinds of stuff, you know, at the courthouse fighting for this.
Right.
And, you know, most of the freemen were killed after they had surrendered. So some of those guys, I think it was 150, whatever it was,
right,
some of them had surrendered.
Right.
And after they were surrendered, they were basically killed. That's why they called it the massacre.
Wow.
Okay, so almost 50 of them were murdered later that night after being held as prisoners for several hours. Now, the numbers of the dead really have varied, because they threw a lot of the bodies into what they call the Red River, and they have some mass graves out there as well. It's all in Louisiana.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, it had to do with governor.
Right.
Okay. And by that time, they had emerged as Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
All right. So they said every election between 1868 and 1876 was actually marked by violence and pervasive fraud.
Right.
All right. And you look at that and say, hey, none of this stuff has changed.
Right.
You know, none of that stuff has changed. And it's a shame, but the intimidation, the murders, black voter suppression, which we hear about all the time in the news, they say were instrumental to the Democratic Party regaining political control in state legislatures by the 1870s. Mm. So now you see that there's a flip.
Right.
Okay, because now they talk about the Republicans with that, but then before, they were talking about the Democrats.
Right.
Okay, there was a flip.
I always wonder when that flip happened.
I can tell you
when.
No.
That's what you just said. Okay.
No. Back then, it was, look, the Republicans, they got credit for the freeing of the slaves because Lincoln was the first Republican president.
Right.
Okay, so the Democrats were the ones who didn't want them to be freed.
Right.
Okay, it wasn't until the 1860s when they finally realized that because remember what I just told you about the Voting Act?
Okay, right.
Was 1865.
Right.
Well, now is what happened was that the Democrats learned that, wait a minute, you know what? We got to get those votes. So it's what they did. They flipped, okay?
Okay.
And they started a campaign. This is all historical. Historical is true, too. Okay, historical. Okay, historical information. So I'm not taking sides with this. I'm just telling you what the facts are.
Right.
Okay? But what happened was that it flipped, okay? So they realized, you know what? We need to get those votes.
Right.
Because now they realize, okay, now the Republicans basically were doing well before that with that vote.
Right.
So what started happening was some of the, let's just put it this way. So some of the things that were being negative towards the Republican Party about how they interact with African Americans.
Right.
Okay, so they started this campaign, basically, a marketing campaign, so to speak.
Right.
You know, that moved in a direction, oh, it's the Republicans that are bad people versus the Democrats. Look, the reality is both sides, in my opinion.
Right.
Okay, but that's what was going on, right, wrong, or indifferent. I mean, people don't even realize Martin Luther King was a Republican.
Right.
You know, so.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You know. But you look at these kind of things about this intimidation and everything, and it was bad. I mean,
right.
There's just no two ways about it. So the Colfax murders were considered one of the worst events in American history. Now they had in March of 1865. Now that's 100 years before the Voter Act that I just told you about.
Right.
They had one guy who wanted to become governor. His name was James Madison Wells. As a Democratic nominated legislature passed the black codes that restricted the rights of the freedmen. So here we go again. So they're getting into office, and now they want to restrict the voting rights, et cetera.
Right.
So that became a problem, because what they also did was that they disenfranchised the ex-Confederates. So now, remember, because the Confederates had fought against the Union.
Right.
They couldn't vote. Now they flipped it.
Right.
Okay? And they said, hey, you know what? Now the Confederates can vote. Well, these were already Southerners.
Right.
So now's what they did to get that vote.
Right.
Okay? Now all of a sudden, you know, they changed it.
Right.
Okay? So that they could do that. So this guy, Wells, he scheduled a new constitutional convention now in July of 1866. Well, the constitutional convention before that was when they established the Constitution and all of that.
Right.
So now they're going to establish another constitutional convention.
Right.
But it was postponed because of what also happened was called the New Orleans Massacre.
Right.
Now, you know, we got people down there in New Orleans. I don't know if they know about this or not, but, you know, armed Southern white Democrats attacked blacks who had a parade in support of the convention. 38 people killed, 34 black and 4 whites, and more than 40 wounded as a result of this.
Right.
You know, again, speaking out about voting rights.
Right.
You know, so Andrew Johnson, who was president at that time because Lincoln had been assassinated, he actually got blamed for the massacre, you know, by Republican agitation. You know, a popular national backlash against Johnson's policies led to national voters electing a majority Republican Congress in 1866. So here we go.
Right.
A Republican Congress got elected in 1866. So here we go again with one majority versus the other majority.
Right.
And now people not liking it.
Right.
You know, and you look at that and say that the time still hasn't changed.
Right.
Because anytime one party's in control versus another party, we're going to have these emotions.
Right.
You know, and again, I think that that's wrong on both sides.
Right.
All right. So what do? They also passed the Civil Rights Act of 1866. Now, here's what's interesting. We passed another Civil Rights Act. When was that? 1964. So
right.
Here we go. Okay, now Johnson signed that one. Andrew,
right.
Now, this had to do with Andrew Johnson.
Right, so Lyndon Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson signed
right.
this one. Okay,
right.
It's just coincidental that both names were Johnson's. Okay?
Right.
And he signed that one because why? You know, you had already had the Kennedy assassination. The country was in upheaval.
So instead of Lyndon Johnson passing another one, why they just didn't reinforce the one that was there?
Well, I don't know, okay?
Right.
I mean, that's a good question. But the reality is what happened with the original one was that one had to do with Republicans.
Oh, okay.
1866.
Right.
This one had to do with Democrats.
Right.
1964.
Right. Gives them a good look.
Hey, I don't know.
Right.
You know,
politically.
You know, well, I can't tell you on the air what Johnson said when he signed the Civil Rights Act of 1960.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Okay, there
right.
it is. I'm not going to put that out there. But at any rate, so to me, it was designed, okay, to encourage now the blacks to look more toward the Democratic Party than they are with the Republican Party, you know, so
right.
to speak, you know. And again, I look at all this and say it's all about the emotions.
Right.
And that's the shame of it, you know. And it's always going to be that way. I mean, I've got friends that are very emotional about, you know, politics and things of that nature. But I guess everybody out there can be, you know. There's got to be a middle of the road.
There's some people that'll be willing to, and I've seen it happen, man, that's willing to end friendships over, you know, political discussions, man. Like, you know, it's sad, man.
Yeah. I've experienced some of that. But fortunately, I have a couple of good friends. We can get in these heated discussions, but we're never going to lose our friendship over it.
Right.
You know, because we're all entitled to our, you know, our opinion about it.
I think arguing and healthy, I think it's healthy to have these discussions. That way you lay it all on the table, not to a point that it turns to violence, but to have an open and honest dialogue is the only way to get to the root of things, in my opinion.
Well, you know what people don't realize, Jamal, is that all this is a form of domestic terrorism.
True.
When you really look at it, I mean, look at what these guys are doing in the 1800s.
Right.
You know, terrorism has to do with fear.
Right.
Okay. You know, fear of people not voting, threatening people not to vote. All those kind of things have to do with fear.
But even in the last election recently, there were some.
Are you talking about 2016, the presidential election?
Right. Uh-huh. Wasn't there bombs sent to?
Oh.
You know,
number of
to
things.
The Clintons, to yeah. Obama, quite a few people, correct?
Well, let's just look at June 14th, 2017. On June 14th, 2017, if I ask the listeners right now, what happened on June 14th, 2017, I bet you the majority of them don't know. They may be going to their computers to try and look it up. But that was when you had the congressional baseball practice shooting.
Wow.
Okay? And that was when what happened? Do you recall that, Jamal?
I very vaguely recall it. Go ahead.
Yeah, because we have a tendency to forget the stuff in history. For about 10 minutes, the shots were continuously fired. They said that probably about 50 to 100 people, bullets were shot during that
right.
time. And several people were shot. The gunman actually was the only one that died because he got into a gunfight with the police.
Right.
But they had several people that were wounded, including one of the senators and things of that nature, that was wounded. And... You know, even Jeff Flake got involved and said people know that this is the Republican baseball team practicing. And, you know, so it was directed toward Republicans, anti-Republican.
Right.
You know, and again, this is 2017, which meant it was after the current administration got elected and people got upset about that.
Right.
You know, make a long story short. So
right.
I don't know. You know, you look at these kind of things and say, horrible. So is what I did. I looked up the 10 top terrible acts of United States political and violence, and that was one of them. The other one, okay, going back now, you know, 1874, because again, I'm trying to show people from back there up to here.
Right.
You know, the election riot of 1874. Where was this? This was in Barber County, Alabama. Okay, Republicans had dominated the area since the end of the Civil War. Thanks to the newly freed blacks, voters, along with the alleged out-of-state voters, that things were changing.
Right.
Okay, because other people in that area felt that their voices were not being heard. So anytime those voices are not being heard, people are going to get upset.
Right.
That's how we got our freedom.
Right.
Okay, no taxation without representation with England.
Right.
Okay, so people got upset. So this is 1874. All right, they had what they call the White League, which was a paramilitary group that was set up to promote white men and Democrats, came to the town of Eufaula, hoping to intimidate or otherwise persuade Republican voters to abstain from voting. Instead, a riot broke out. You know, 8 men were killed. As many as 80 were wounded, most of them black at that time. You know, so, again, you're looking at these clashes over voting.
Right.
You know, they didn't want people to vote. They wanted the election to go in a certain direction.
Right.
So, you know, again, emphasizing this stuff is not new.
What's your thoughts on, because the last presidential election, presidential nominees, kind of the fan in the flames a little bit at the some of the rallies and stuff, and kind of provoking, like, hey, it's okay to go ahead and hit somebody. I'll pay for the legal fees.
I'm not getting into any of that, Jamal, because, again, those are emotional issues for people.
Right.
So I'm not going to quote, misquote, or nothing else, any of those kind of things. But you want to talk about people hitting somebody. May 22nd, 1856, one of the most famous events in the history of the United States Senate, Jamal, occurred when, now you know what caning is?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Singapore. That's one of the... You don't have to tell me, right, man.
Okay, here's what happened. The caning of Senator Charles Sumner by a representative called Preston Brooks. Okay? Now, here's what it was. Sumner was a strident abolitionist. He had given a damning speech for a few days earlier that featured a number of attacks on Democratic senators, including Stephen Douglas and Andrew Butler. Brooks, who was Butler's cousin, took extreme offense at the remarks and decided that something had to be done. So Brooks' plan, Jamal, was to attack Sumner with a cane because he thought Sumner wasn't a gentleman and wouldn't agree to an honorable duel, okay? And I guess, you know, yeah. So he because he didn't think the guy was going to duel with him, he decides he's going to take a cane, okay, and go upside his head. It basically is what happened. And they were cousins.
It kind of reminds me of that Clint Eastwood scene. Well, he shouldn't have had his back to me, right?
Yeah, but after this, so what happened was after the Senate adjourned that day, and remember, when you're on the Senate floor, you can say anything you want.
Right.
It's supposed to be protected speech.
Right.
Okay? It's called an absolute privilege. So you can't say that, you know, it can hold me up for defamation. It's a privilege. They can do it. All right? But after the Senate had adjourned for the day, Brooks snuck up behind Sumner, snuck up behind him, Jamal, and began to beat him with a cane. Okay? Brooks faced little punishment for his actions, only being fined about $8,000 in today's money. What today's money would be, which back then would be a lot of money.
Right.
You know. But right. Sumner suffered immensely from his injuries. He took 3 years to recover.
I know he did.
3 years to recover. And then they say that he endured lingering effects for the remainder of his life. All because his cousin didn't like what he had to say.
I think we ought to bring Kanan back, man.
Jamal, don't even go there, man. I think for graffiti, like Singapore did.
Oh, sagging.
You know, oh, sagging. Okay. Well, now, wait a minute, Jamal. No, I remember, didn't you sag at one time?
No, not me, man. I went to a private school. I was raised right, man.
No. Let's just back up. I remember one time, Jamal, I told you about that sagging, and you didn't listen. And then you turned around and jumped off the school bus, okay, and your pants went down to your ankles. It was after that you stopped sagging. Now, refresh my memory.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, okay, right.
I don't recall that at all, mm-hmm. man. But no, but I think it'll stop a lot of, you know, graffiti, petty theft, all those kind of things, man. It'll sure shut some of that down. Now, I know there'll be people that'll be crying saying, not my boy, he didn't do it.
Right.
Get him.
Get him. Drop those shorts and get out that cane. Well, In the United States, Jamal, we have something we call the Eighth Amendment. And the Eighth Amendment has to do with cruel and unusual punishment. So there would be a whole lot of disagreement with that.
Well, what about cruel and unusual crimes?
Yeah, well, they don't look at it that way. Anyway, look, there was other issues. You know, Arkansas, gubernatorial election, 1872. And again, I'm trying to go back in time to show that these things were not new. Right. They had the hard hat revolution with some of these guys with hard hats were fighting against some of this stuff. The New York City draft riots. I mean, this stuff is all amazing as you go through time. We're talking about the 1920s and all of that as well. Right. Even when Al Capone, and his group was out there running around doing things as well. So, again, look, everybody, is what we wanted. The message today is, look, we're just trying to get everybody to calm down out there. You may not agree with the politics, you know, or the things or the presidential candidates or the senators, governors, et cetera. But we need to stay in control of our emotions is the bottom line. Would you agree with that, Jamal?
I agree 100%.
All right, then. You've been listening to Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join us next week. Hey, do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, we want you to be aware. We want you to be vigilant. We want you to be safe. And more importantly, we want you to be a reluctant victim. Until next week, guys.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.